Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
An Erio's original.
The most important thing in the world is to be kind to yourself. Yes. It's also the hardest.
I've heard when people back in the day were like, you're a gay comic. Or, you know what I mean? Like, when you're queer, people try to put you in that box of like, you're just a queer comic. You're just a gay comic. But I also want to talk about my experiences. Like, it's a hard I find that to be a really hard balance in this industry.
It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. Today, our guest is a friend of mine, who is kind of amazing. He does it all, everything. Comedian, writer, actor, producer, director, everything. Jeff Garland.
Yeah, coming out of the dark.
I wanted to ask, I love you, and I wanted to ask, how did I get into your show, My Kind of Town? Now, will you tell me, I can't remember how.
Well, odds are, if I may,
and
I don't know for sure, I would have submitted to them a list of people, my fellow comedians, that I'd want to get on the show.
Yes.
And you came on and played a detective. You were saying that, but this is a series that I did for Fox many years ago. I did 6 episodes, I think. It was first called Barclay's Beat, and then they changed the title to, or was it My Kind of Town, then Barclay? I don't remember. Point being, as I did the show, none of the episodes ever aired. And Margaret, I played a cop, a Chicago police officer, and Margaret came on and played a police officer.
Yes. And
Leah Remini was opposite me, her and Mitchell Whitfield.
Oh, Mitchell, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, and they were a couple.
They had started dating on my show for a while, yes.
Yes.
I remember saying to him, and this is not giving up anything, especially where she's at now, both of us used to sleep over at Leah's house. We had almost slumber parties back
then. Oh, wow.
It's a long time ago, you know. And I remember finding inside Leah's house a pamphlet for, what's that soap that people sell in sort of a pyramid scheme?
You know, Amway.
Amway. Which is based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
But it's not a cult.
Right.
You know? And I remember saying to him, I think her family, like shocked, I think her family sells Amway. And Mitchell looked at me and went, you don't know the half of it. And I was like, okay. Later on, I found out. But I got to say, I was very close with Leah and still am. I love her.
She's great.
She's fantastic. A great human being and wonderful in every way. She never pushed Scientology on me.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I had no idea that she was a Scientologist.
So, whatever they say, you know, she never pushed it. Because she was dating Mitchell, I know he took a class or two, but said, I can't, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that may have ultimately broken them up.
Yeah.
Because they were way into each other. So I told her, I actually volunteered to be on her show. The first season, but it didn't. You know, they had more gripping guests than me
on her Scientology show.
Yes, Scientology.
Oh,
show.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I didn't know anything about I don't know anything about Scientology except for Judy. Remember Judy Toll?
Remember Judy Toll? One of my ex-wife's best friends, Judy Toll, was in the pilot for Curb Your Enthusiasm, playing an HBO executive. Judy Toll, I loved, thought was hilarious. I used to perform with her. Mm-hmm. She'd do stand-up on my shows and stuff. I didn't know how brilliant she was until I went to her memorial. Mm-hmm. And they showed all these videos of her.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, she was so much better than I even thought. And I thought highly of her.
Yeah, she was great.
It was a sad thing. She died. She died of cancer.
She died, but she was also Andrea Dice Clay. Do you remember?
Yeah, Andrea Dice Clay. Yeah, was her thing.
That was so great.
Yeah, no, she was a great person.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, all the, you know, look, people out here especially are looking for something just to make it feel okay and warm.
Right.
And sometimes that's a cult.
Well, I could see why people would want to, they would want to join anything. Like, there are always these cults that rise up around acting coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or...
Scientology did that famously, yeah.
Yeah, or therapists.
Yep.
You know, anybody who is here to tell you what to do, maybe even probably psychics, too.
Yeah.
They probably have cults around them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never actually, I think I did one where I did have a therapist that did kind of have a cult around her, but I couldn't afford it. It was too expensive after a while, so I stopped going.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I got to tell you, it's all a big journey, and I'm still growing at 57, but when I look back on things I did, choices I made, I have nothing that I'm like embarrassed about, or I don't even have regrets.
Right.
You know, someone said, do you have any regrets? And I said, no. And they were like in the audience because I do Q&A.
Yeah.
I said, but let me be clear to all of you. I have made hundreds upon thousands of mistakes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I anticipate also being a man making many more mistakes.
Yeah.
Because it's in our DNA.
Yeah.
Men make mistakes. Women do too, but not like men. Men on a daily basis. How am I going to screw up today? Who am I going to offend today?
Mm-hmm.
Through all being good-hearted.
Right.
You know, it just, it's going to happen. So I don't want anyone to think because I don't have regrets that I, don't make mistakes. Mm. Oh, do I make mistakes? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
by the way, you know,
do.
It's not a mistake coming here today.
This is not a mistake.
Nope.
Not a mistake. But it's like, I wouldn't, I don't know, but you have a very successful life. So making mistakes doesn't mean you're not going to be successful in what you choose to do.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think mistakes mostly are, unless you really do, I don't know what kind of mistakes you can make to kill your career except for breaking the law or, yeah, breaking the law, you know, what in some way. But I know that mistakes are all about who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're as kind and thoughtful and as good a person as you can be on that journey. And by the way, my biggest lesson in life, well, there's two of them. One is the most important thing in the world is to be kind to yourself.
Yes.
It's also the hardest.
Right.
It's so easy for people to say, be kind to yourself. Well, that sounds great, but you should attempt it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I usually say could. I'm telling everybody they should attempt to be kind to yourself. Because if you're kind to yourself, you're going to be kind to others.
Right.
It goes hand in hand. When you've got self-loathing, you're not going to be so kind to other people.
No, it's true.
But the other thing that I learned that's my big thing is to, I'm all about being confident, which I'm supremely confident in certain areas, comedy being one of them, but also to be humble and grateful for the opportunity, for everything. And I aspire to, I thought that I could eliminate it, and that's ego. You can't eliminate ego because we're human beings, but you can train yourself to recognize ego, that that's your motivation. Like, why am I doing this? You know, like I mentioned to you earlier, something that I've done recently where I said to myself, are you doing this because of ego? Well, I was talking about if I'm dating a younger woman and what's my motivation, you know, is it because I'm afraid of death? Is it because of ego? It's like other people go, look at him, look what he did. And that's what I always question. That's the most recent one that I questioned.
Yeah, that would, I mean, I wonder about
that.
And
I'm not
that
dating
too.
Someone young.
No. Yeah. But it's kind of like, I've dated younger people, but then that's mostly like kind of a newer thing for me, just because in life, in general, I've always had like older friends
right.
and older lovers.
Right. By the way, when I first met you, mm-hmm. you felt like you had an old soul.
Oh, that's good.
No, you did.
That's good.
You felt you were a delight.
Yeah, I
remember
nice.
Clearly. I remember, like I told you, I remember clearly yeah. when we first met in San Francisco. But you are someone who, if you were dating someone in their 50s and you're in your late 20s, mm-hmm. it would make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be like, oh, she is a substantial woman mm-hmm. to be with a man who's that age. And by yeah. the way, as we know, just because you're in your 50s doesn't mean you have a sense of maturity or depth or,
yeah.
or gravitas.
Mm-hmm. I think you're curious, though. I think that you have
very
a childlike,
yeah.
like, curious nature,
yeah,
which is really good.
Well, I think anyone who's a good comedian, that would be true.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
That's true.
That's true of you.
Yeah.
The things you talk about on stage, curiosity has so much to do with that.
Right.
Yeah.
And just wanting to know.
Yeah. Just, yeah.
But I think a lot about, yeah, like Toy Boat, where we met in yeah. San Francisco, and the comedy club was the Holy City Zoo.
Holy City Zoo.
That
yep.
was, were you playing that club that
yep.
week?
Yep. I was playing Holy City Zoo. I played there numerous times with Laura Keitlinger or Janine Garofalo.
Yes.
That's who I played. And Bob Fisher was
yeah,
the
Yeah, Bob Fisher was the booker.
Booker and you know, owner, you know.
Yeah, and then Becky, Rebecca Spencer, who
was the Robin's assistant,
yes.
Robin Williams' assistant, and she was the bartender.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was, and also that was a place, Holy City Zoo, in its history, most famous for where Robin Williams worked out.
Right. He did sets there. He would ride his bike over from Marin, uh-huh. like some of the nights that, we would all be there. He would come. And were you there during the era where at night, like after all of the shows would get out, all the comics would come to the zoo and we would be like on all sort of doing sets or I keep remembering you being there because it would be like Robin and Jeremy Kramer on stage making fun of Perry Kurtz on the other side of the stage
yes.
trying to do a set.
Yes. That's very funny. Yes.
Stuff like that.
I was there all that. It was, that wasn't, that was, you know, you look back because comedy is so precise in comedy clubs. That was an artist haven for comedians.
Right.
The room was so strange.
It was.
It almost felt like you were performing on a bunk bed.
Yeah, it was.
Am
it
I
was
wrong?
Very much a bunk bed.
Yeah.
Because it had like kind of a weird little roof on it. And
yeah.
like upstairs, there was like a little set, like the Muppets, those old men
yes,
and the Muppets.
Yes, the old men, yeah.
The sitting up there on the balcony.
No, but there was, here's the thing. Even though comedy had become bigger in the 70s, obviously the first comedy boom was in the 80s. I think the second one's now.
Mm-hmm.
But that was all about artistry.
Right.
Nothing. And that has to do with Bob Fisher, too, because he was about that.
Yeah.
He was about the art of stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And not very often do you have people who... anymore at any point where it's about that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So This American Girl, was that the name of it?
All American Girl.
All American
yes.
Girl. I remember watching it with Janine and saying out loud, why does she have to say those lines? Why does she have to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is terrible for her.
Yeah.
I apologize, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really felt like they're not doing anything with who they have.
Right.
They have someone of substance.
Yeah.
And then when you started talking about the weight stuff, I was like, who can I beat up?
Oh.
Who can I? Well, because
yeah.
what does being thin have to do with comedy?
Right.
At any point. And
yeah.
also, you're curvy.
Mm-hmm.
You're all woman.
Right.
What does thin have to do with comedy and all that? So now who you are in your career,
mm-hmm.
is there enough money in the world for you to do the sequel to that show in terms
know.
Of the same type of writing?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not the same. It's to me, it's like I didn't know what to do though, because I was so
young
and I didn't
point.
Understand.
Because you're at a point now.
Yeah.
We were talking about wanting to do procedurals because
yeah,
we both love English procedurals.
Yes.
It's about, look, we work for a living. Mm-hmm. I'm in your home. Mm-hmm. We have homes. I have an ex-wife. I have children who I love, all of them. I have to take care of them.
Yes.
I have responsibility, but I'll be damned, mm-hmm. damned if I do something that doesn't bring me joy.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the problem with doing sitcoms, mm-hmm. is sitcoms in general, the material's not rich.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two or three takes,
yeah,
and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for me, when I do something like the Goldbergs, there's a lot of coverage and a lot mm-hmm. of takes, and it gets stale for me. And I have to look to the director. You got to give me something to find it here, because
yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah.
I don't have it.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's where the magic is, too, is like if you can really do that in like multiple takes and get, you know, then I really like, I think, oh, wow, actors have a kind of magic that, you know, really is unbelievable.
Oh, it most certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
I see it all the time when we do Curb.
Mm-hmm.
Because the magic comes out of people like right away. It's so
yeah.
beautiful to watch.
Yeah. Well, everybody on there, you guys are so, everybody's so great and so
well,
fun.
We're all present, and not one actor at any point in the history of the show
mm-hmm.
ever believed the hype.
Mm-hmm.
We just do it our way. Because when we first started the show, we were referred to by HBO as their little experimental show.
Oh,
I swear.
Yeah.
And we've gone on to be the longest running show in the history of HBO.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is really exciting. But, man, we just did early on what we thought was funny.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
There was no, like, people aren't going to get this or whatever. We did what we thought was funny,
mm-hmm.
and that brought a lot of joy. And I literally, when I filmed that show, laugh all day long.
I'm sure.
I laugh in scenes because we've made it appropriate
yeah.
on our show. If someone says something funny, the other person's going
to
laugh.
You have to laugh, yeah.
Yeah.
You just have
and
to.
We're very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
And but even off camera, all day.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I'm not working hard or we're not
working hard. No, but
great. It's just so damn joyful.
Yeah.
And the improvising is so freeing and removes stress from the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because the hardest thing about acting, hardest thing to me, if you're a good actor, is learning lines.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, it can be really hard. Or like now for me with the Goldbergs, I learn it like snapping my fingers.
Yeah.
I remember I was a villain once on Baywatch.
Ooh.
It was the best acting I ever did and the worst acting.
Oh my God.
The worst acting because I'm not good enough to rise up a bad material.
Uh-huh.
And the best acting because I had scenes with David Hasselhoff and he's yelling at me because I'm the villain.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't laugh.
Oh.
I mean, when you don't laugh and David Hasselhoff's yelling at you, that's a skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like that. But I remember the other actors they give the guests the most dialogue, but the other actors would literally, they were so, it's like a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
They would like look at it once or twice and know it. And
yeah.
Like, how do they do that? But they worked every day. So like now on the Goldbergs, I don't look at it till the night before. I look once in the chair. I run it in the scene, you know, the rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work with my dialogue coach and I run it two or three times and I'm completely off book.
Yeah, I think
boom.
Your brain grows
yep,
to accommodate.
Well, it's a muscle that works for that, you know.
And then you know your character well enough now because you'll say things in a certain way that
right.
your character would say it in.
Yeah.
So you get used to that part
yeah.
of
yeah.
that character becomes easy.
Very much so.
It's
yeah.
great. But David Hasselhoff would throw me off. I would be.
By the way, would throw anyone off. So I'm very proud of my accomplishment
would,
on there.
Really
but
excited.
The material was terrible.
But David
I was
Hasselhoff.
An evil disc jockey who took over the
oh
beach.
Oh my God, that's great.
So does that give you an
that.
Idea?
I have to watch that now. I love that. Did you have any scenes with Pamela?
I most certainly did.
That's incredible.
I even had, I had a thing with Pam Anderson, like this romantic run, slow motion running thing.
I love it.
And then we were supposed to kiss and it was the first day I worked and she wouldn't kiss me. She's like, nah, I don't know him. I'm, you know. And then she told me later in the week, she goes, I would have so totally kissed you.
Oh,
I thought that was very nice.
She's
of her.
Lovely. She's a good egg. She's a real fan of comedy.
She's very, when I mean, that's the only time I spent with her and she was really delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. She's awesome.
Most people who do what we do are delightful.
Yeah. Yeah.
and they're kind. It's the one every once in a while you go, really? How about that? You know, someone is just such a jerk. You just go, wow.
David Hasselhoff is interesting. The only time I've ever been around him, he was acting real weird, and he smelled like chemsex. He smelled kind of like poppers, which I don't know if it was my imagination or...
Wow, well, if he was on poppers, how can he be a normal person?
I don't know if he was, but
by the way,
he seemed
a very
to smell
nice,
like
nice
that.
Man.
He's a nice man.
And yes.
An interesting man. Very odd,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the whole premise of David Hasselhoff is odd.
Is odd,
but he
yeah.
was great in the SpongeBob movie.
He's a kind of great in everything.
No, I know.
He's great
He's
in
David
all
Hasselhoff.
Things. Oh, yeah, then I love SpongeBob, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So great.
I got to do one.
Which one?
Last season. I played a guinea pig.
Ooh.
Who only people saw after they had some bad crusty crabs.
Oh.
And it was like, it was a takeoff on LSD.
Oh, wow.
And I was also a villain. That turned out to be a bad guinea pig. But it was great fun.
Yeah, why are you get the villain parts? That's a fun that's
animated.
A fun
I've done quite a few villain parts. Yes, animated.
Yes.
But in real life, I remember I shaved my head for Curb, and Ben Stiller was guesting that season, and he's like, "You have to play a villain."
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to play a villain, but
yeah.
I'm not an actor, even though I'm an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a comedian more than anything. So I've had opportunities to play like pedophiles and mm-hmm. different. I mean, one time I took a role. It just was too tempting, and I did on Law and Order.
Ooh,
and
yeah,
I played a murderer and a rapist.
Oh, wow.
And I normally wouldn't do that just because
I want to see that one now.
Yeah.
I haven't seen
by
that.
By the way, it aired
uh-huh.
the same night that I made my debut on Wizards of Waverly Place.
Oh,
and
wow.
And I just would scream out to everybody, that's range!
It
that's
is range.
Range!
That is range.
Yeah.
I love it.
But I...
was it an SVU or
It was SVU.
And yep. What was the... So what
I
year
actually
was that?
Played a character loosely based on Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, wow. That's
And this
great.
Is before anything.
Yeah, that's great.
By the way, I really hate that people have said that everybody knew because that's a lie.
Yeah.
I worked with them once. He was not a kind gentleman. And I would have taken out a Twitter page every day and
mm-hmm.
tweeted, Harvey Weinstein's a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day
yeah.
if I had known.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the worst people I've ever met in show business.
Yeah.
In terms of just being a jerk.
Yeah.
And that's how much of a jerk he is. I don't mind saying it on your show.
Of course.
At all.
Yeah.
And even I would have said it before all the things
right.
went down.
Right.
So, but the thing is, I knew nobody who knew that about him, including people who worked with him and did a lot
yeah.
of movies with him.
Yeah.
So if you did know, shame on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't know. And most people I don't know. So when that all was coming out and, you know, you see people go, everybody knew. I'm like, who knew?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know. I mean, I think it's, yeah. It's
you terrible. Hear rumors. I remember hearing rumors about Bill Cosby.
Do
you know what I remember discussing, and I'm bringing his name and whatever, but Bob Newhart and I were talking. Bob Newhart's one of my heroes.
Yeah, yeah. He's great.
Nice man. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how we had both heard from years ago that Bill Cosby would be with showgirls, like cheated on his wife in Vegas and
uh-huh.
stuff, and they had worked. Like, you heard rumors of that.
Right.
You never heard that he was drugging anyone to do that ever. But you heard that he, like, here I am, this young comedian,
mm-hmm.
and I've heard that Bill Cosby is screwing showgirls.
Yeah.
How the fuck do I know this? You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but little did I know that, what I'm saying is these weird, weird behaviors, I don't know that anyone knows any of this shit.
Yeah, or that it, you know, only the people who it happened to know.
Right,
and that's
right.
A lot of people
right.
that it happened to.
But outside of those people,
right.
if you did know any of this stuff, shame on you. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, you should have either reported to, I know it's hard, what authorities you call the police? I hear Harvey Weinstein's a rapist. What's your proof? Oh, I hear, you know, like you don't
yeah.
have, but you could. Even through subtle ways,
mm-hmm.
get people to realize that.
Well, I think in show business, though, there's so many people who just are afraid. They're just
Man,
afraid.
Can I just say something to you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always telling my kids this. I tell them a lot of stuff. The difference between everyone is afraid,
mm-hmm.
period. successful people don't let fear paralyze them.
Right.
That's really the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like you did. Okay. I'm going to point out you.
Mm-hmm.
You had your belly dancing festival.
Yes, yes.
But I remember when probably the first time you ever did that on stage, you were probably terrified.
Yeah, yeah, it was scary. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Did you let it stop you?
No, no.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
And so Hollywood, especially when there was blacklisting and all this, mm-hmm. there's always been fear.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly the fear is are people behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Some actors are scared what people think. And you're not going to get anywhere as a comedian when you're worried about what people think.
Right.
But man, that fear just leads to people damaging one another.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's really true.
Yeah.
Well, we're fearless. We are fearless.
Well, no, I say I don't think fearless. I think the fear is there.
But we do
don't,
it in we despite don't,
like,
of it.
In spite of it. Like, yeah, fuck you, fear. And also, by the way, I'll point out you. You're a person who's like, fuck you, adversity. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's the way you see.
That's how you handle it.
A busboy last night at the restaurant I was at said, mm-hmm. "Can I?" Before my date got there, "Can I ask you some, you know, advice?" I said, "Sure."
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "What do you recommend for?" I go. First off, I want to tell you, there's no secret for success except mm-hmm. for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Keep moving forward. Try this. Try that." He was like 21.
Aww.
I'm like, just keep doing stuff.
Yeah.
What will feel right as you go, but keep moving forward.
Right.
That's the thing, man. Adversity and all the things that come at you, you just have to keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's the secret to success.
It's true.
There is no other secret.
Yes.
I mean, God willing, you're talented. God willing, you do the most with your talent. But even then, you and I know supremely talented people who didn't make it. But when you look at the reason they didn't make it, it would be fear-based. It would be, there's something that goes along.
Yeah.
Tony Bill, who was an actor, producer, director,
mm-hmm.
His most famous film was My Bodyguard that he made.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was but I saw him once on Letterman, like the 12:30 Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that he's never seen anybody who's great not make it. And I can look back on my career and I can say, I've never seen anybody who's great not make it, who kept moving forward.
Right.
Who kept moving forward. Who during those, it's like you also look at, there's actors I know who now are even in their 40s. They haven't had their big break. They work.
Yeah.
But I think it's not if, it's when.
Yeah, right.
When you're too good.
Yeah.
There's going to be that role that pops out,
mm-hmm.
you know, that makes you known, you know. You just got to keep moving forward, man.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. And then it happens. Like, it just happens. Like, it figures you out. Like, the world figures you out.
The world figures you out. At this. So it's a journey.
Mm-hmm.
That's why to be kind to yourself and find joy in your journey is a much better way to go about it. And I, when I was younger, didn't know that.
Yeah. It's hard to know.
It's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
Unless you have someone like me explaining and you trust me.
Yeah.
Because you know, I help younger comedians all the time.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really great.
That's like, that's a jam of mine.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing to do too, mm-hmm. because that's very important and that's very generous.
Yeah.
And
it's
what we need. Because I mean, I think I definitely had that with older comics.
Most definitely. Younger, yeah.
You know, for sure. I mean, with like people like Joan Rivers or like...
Joan Rivers. I love Joan.
She was awesome.
I only got to know her the last couple years of her life.
She was great, yeah.
Yeah, she was really great.
She was really special. Yeah. I got that from like Alan King or like...
Alan King.
the greatest.
Alan King, who people don't know, was not a good comedian, a great comedian.
Great, really great.
One of the best performances I ever saw was Alan King. I was probably 30 years old, 29 years old. So I've been doing comedy for 10 years. And I saw him in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most personal, interesting, funny set.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe how great he was.
So great.
I was like, wow. And so, but by the way, most young comics wouldn't even know who Alan King is.
Yeah, they won't know.
But there was a reputation that he might be hackneyed back then. Just saying the name Alan King.
Yeah.
Sounds like, and he was supremely great.
He was super great.
Yeah.
Also, Charles Grodin, who wasn't a comic, but he's just a good guy.
Yeah, very
really
much
good
so.
Guy.
A hero of mine.
Yeah, definitely.
And one of the greatest comedies of all time.
So great.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that.
He was in The Heartbreak Kid, and he was in Midnight Run. Two of the best you could ever see.
Yeah, such a great guy.
Yeah.
But those comics, and Bob Newhart, of course, he's amazing.
Amazing. That's. I hope that people talk about you and I that way.
They should.
I hope.
They should.
Yeah.
They will.
Yeah, I hope.
They have to. Well, I'm so glad that you came over today.
I am honored to have been in your presence in your home.
We had the best time.
Yes.
And now, so where can people find you on your socials? And
okay, the most important thing is that they watch my new Netflix special.
Awesome, yes.
That's number one, because I captured lightning in a bottle.
That's great.
I'm known for going up and not having any material, yeah, just improvising. And so because it was a Netflix special, I worked 3 years on having a real substantial beginning, middle, and an end. So I captured that in the first show that I filmed. The second show, knowing I had the other in the bag and I was happy with it, I went nuts.
Yeah.
That's the special.
Yeah.
The second show is the special. It's called Our Man in Chicago. And I am thrilled with how it came out.
So
people should watch that. And then in terms of me, social media, I am strictly Instagram.
Yes.
I had a lot of followers on Twitter. I gave it up because how long until I make somebody upset?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to include a picture on Instagram. And also the amount of people that write hateful things is so much less on Instagram. And whenever I find someone where I'm like, why would someone write that? And I go to their page, their page has no posts.
Right.
And they follow a bunch of people.
Yeah.
No one really follows them.
Right.
They have no posts. And they're there to write hateful things.
Yeah.
But what if I told you that happens once a month, maybe? Once a month, maybe.
Yeah.
Whereas Instagram, it was, Twitter, it was every day.
Yeah.
So I'm Jeff Garland on at Jeff Garland on Instagram. And Instagram makes me happy. I love Instagram.
I do too.
Yeah, it's really joyful.
I love it.
Oh, I'm going to follow you. I never followed you.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. I'll be following you.
Perfect.
And your adventures.
Thank you.
The adventures of Margaret Cho.
And Lucia.
And Lucia, who is so adorable.
She's so cute.
All right. Thank you, Margaret.
Thanks, Jeff.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And now we talk to the wonderful comedian, Mav Viola.
I started to be an actress in the 90s, and the demands on women, their body shape, was so outrageous to be so thin that, like, I just couldn't even, I had to sort of, like, opt out because I couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
I had to eat.
You have to eat. I modeled when I was younger, and they're like, here's a list of things you can't eat. And it was just all things that don't even have calories. It's like olives and like mustard because it's like salty and you retain water.
Oh.
It's horrifying.
So where did you model?
I did local stuff. And then when I moved out here, I did some runway stuff. And then I literally could not do it. It was so boring and so, like, just you can't eat anything. You can't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awful.
It is like, I mean, I do love the way that models do their job. Like, I love, like, the look of somebody who's used to being photographed.
Yes.
Who knows what to do with the camera, which I think is really, some of it is, like, natural, and then some of it comes through with work. And
I
it's
agree.
Quite powerful.
Yeah.
You know? So I do appreciate the idea of it. I tried to be a model when I was really, really young. I was in an agency called Stars in San Francisco.
Amazing.
And I had my headshots done, and then I was trying. I did get a little bit of work. I was hired to run away from Godzilla.
Stop.
At one point.
What were you wearing?
I think a backpack, and I made like $4,000, which was like kind of like a sizable amount of money.
I would run from Godzilla now for that. 100%.
That was a quite a good gig. But that was maybe in like the 80s, and then I got another job. My first Hollywood job was working on a show called Totally Hidden Video, which was a lot like Candid Camera.
Yeah.
And I was in a trailer and I was cleaning it and some people were coming by to buy it. And so they would come over and then other animals would start to come over. So then at the end of the sketch, there was a chicken and like a donkey in there. I mean, it was really... That's actually fun. It was actually fun because of the cute animals. What was your first Hollywood job?
Oh, God. First, the or movie with you and Eliza.
Of, like any kind of like job, like a modeling job.
I did out here. I did a runway show that went down Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh.
And they put me in this like... it was horrifying. They put me in this like mermaid looking like green like sequin gown and did my hair up. I looked like I was going to like prom in Kansas. It was really, really bad. It wasn't that cute. But that was like my first decently paid job. And then I did, and then when I cut all my hair off, that was kind of cool. I started modeling again just a little bit, and I did a campaign for a barber, my hairline product. Yeah, and that was really fun. Like, that was a little different. I took that one on and I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this. I hated modeling, but that one was cool because I got to kind of be myself. I think if you can in some way either remove yourself from yourself and like become something else, it's cool, or if you can totally, they want you for who you are, then it's fun and empowering.
Yeah,
but the weird in between.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would have been a great model if you were around doing shows or doing commercials in the 90s, because you would have been a great CK1.
Yeah, that's thank you. That's very sweet.
That would have been really good. Like Jenny Shimizu.
Yes. Oh, I love her. God,
she's like the best model.
She's so amazing. Yeah,
she's such a beautiful woman.
She's beautiful. Didn't she go out with Angelina Jolie for like forever?
Yeah,
that's so hot.
And now she's she looks the same.
Yeah,
she's about my age. She is. She looks the same. I mean, it's so crazy, like how she is just perfect, doesn't age. I think she does perfect. Like, she has a motorcycle repair shop.
Of course, that's so hot.
And she's married. Her wife is really beautiful. Her wife is really beautiful. Her wife was dark green mascara. It's really fast.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Like fashion dykes that you just like aspirational fashion dykes.
Whenever I see them, fuck you. Like, I just can't. I would give anything. That's so cool.
It's so They're so cool.
I feel like I don't know. Like, I don't know enough about aspirational lesbians. Does that, like, I feel like I don't. I don't know if I'm like, I turned a blind eye or if it, like, I don't know what it is. But
I have a Pinterest board.
Do you?
That's all aspirational lesbians through.
That's how I will learn.
History. Well, like Gertrude Stein and Alice Patoklis, or like, aspirational lesbians like Pola Negri.
Ooh, yes.
From the 20s, who was, I guess, a famous lover of Rudolph Valentino, but they were both queer.
God, that's hot.
Apparently. So I like that too. I like when a queer woman decides to be with a queer man and they try it out.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
That's really beautiful. I would have done,
if I had been born a man and had been an androgynous man, I would have done that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I do kind of wish that when people ask me about my gender, I'm like, I wish that I'd been born male, biologically male, and then played around with gender, like femininity. Right. That's I would have preferred that than like being born female and playing around with masculinity.
It's, well, I think like that though, playing around with masculinity is really interesting because you can anthropomorphize a lot more. Like when I wear a strap on, when I'm packing, I will do sometimes.
Do you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I pack sometimes.
Ooh, that's hot.
I mean, I feel like the extension of I feel the nerve endings in my phallus, even though it's, you know, silicone or whatever.
No, it's like phantom phallus.
I do feel, and if it's in being inserted, I really feel like my partner opening up to receive it. It's a very intimate thing.
Yeah.
But it's also really like, I feel like it's easy to feel it as opposed to like having a penis and feeling like you didn't have one, or feeling like what, I don't know.
No, that's really interesting. I always think that I wouldn't like that because it's this separate object from me.
Right.
But now you're changing my mind a little bit. I might have to go shopping.
I mean, yeah, you don't ever strap on?
No, I did years and years ago with a partner who liked that and wanted that. And I've always said with anyone I've been with, like, if that's something that you need or are interested in or want, like, of course, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not been something that I personally have wanted to explore. I've always been scared of it, thinking it's going to, like, I found a good place with my gender and I get really nervous that it's going to somehow throw me and into a tailspin of, you know.
Yeah,
Like, I'm just going to lose my mind and be like, I need a penis and I can't get one.
Well,
you know?
we can have them. I mean, we can have anything. But it is like, I mean, for me, and it's definitely like, for me, it's not about identity. It's about sex.
Yeah.
So that's what I would use it for. I would never say that, like, oh, well, I actually, I couldn't identify as non-binary because it doesn't, I wouldn't adopt it in like daily life necessarily, but I do think sexually, yes.
Right.
So I do appreciate like the idea of like kind of being able to transform gender with toys. I mean, my favorite thing, I love
really
sex
lovely.
Toys.
Yeah.
They're my favorite.
Yeah.
Are you a toy fan?
I'm embarrassed to say that like there's a lot of things I'm like, I don't know. I'm starting to get to know myself better because I grew up super like Virginia, religion, Christianity.
Yeah.
And it's you'd think that coming out would and being gender fluid and all these things would like lend itself to exploring toys and all the things really quickly but it just hasn't. It's taken me a long time. Like I'm like the most I look like I wouldn't be, but I'm so conservative and like uptight when it comes to that stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's great because it's like, we can be anything. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't make a difference. Like, you can still be gay and not necessarily embrace everything that's out there, you know? And that like, you know, it's like who you are doesn't mean much when it comes to like the landscape of who we are as a community.
Yeah.
But I started to explore toys really young. So I started out like as a lesbian.
Yeah.
And I was very queer as a teenager. And so I discovered like kind of my heterosexual side a little later. But when I was a teenager, I worked at Stormy Leather, which was a BDSM lesbian collective. And
how old were you?
I was probably like 17.
Amazing.
And the woman who ran it was like the heaviest leather bottom. Like all of the women would talk about her with like with an air of respect around her name. Like they would breathe her name with respect because she could take a lot of shit.
Yeah.
A lot of pain, a lot of suffering. I mean, I remember even there was a period of time where all of the girls there were like into scat. And so they were selling like this vegan bean product that could be molded into turds that you could actually eat. And it was just like a protein. Vegan.
Well, I feel like that could come back.
It was like a bean, a brewer's yeast kind of a... confection. And but yeah, they were deeply into BDSM because in the 80s and 90s we were so down with our brothers who were suffering from AIDS and HIV and all of the complications.
Yeah.
So we were really invested in finding a way to be sexual without fluid bonding. So even to the point of like using dental dams, which didn't last.
Yeah.
But it
Those
was like
a nightmare.
Yeah. Have you ever used
one? I've tried. Yeah. It's
weird.
But it's awful.
It's weird.
I don't know if I did it wrong, but it didn't make any sense. A lick of sense.
It doesn't make a lick of sense. And it's also, but it was a way to have solidarity as a gay community. Yeah. I think
that's
now.
Really beautiful.
Yeah. I think looking back, like we were trying to find a way to unite with the men and also trying to say, we're all under this disease. We all have this.
Wow.
You know, I think Diamanda Galas has a tattoo that says we are all HIV positive.
Wow.
And that was like the sentiment.
That's really beautiful.
It was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And so there was BDSM was like a really big deal. And then so toys became this sort of natural extension of how I sort of absorbed sexuality and thought about it. And so I love the Hitachi Magic Wand. Still, there's no better.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's a vibrator that
is that the one on?
It's the white with the blue.
Yep. That's
controls.
The one. On, is it on Sex and the City?
Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, that one's that's awesome.
It's a really strong vibrator, but now they have a rechargeable. In the last decade or so, they've had the rechargeable one.
Yeah.
Which has really changed the game.
Right.
Because usually you would have to have like an extension cord because the shortness of the cord was like 6 feet. But now it's, you know, you have a long one. So anything you can get at Brookstone, I pretty much fuck with it. Like I would use it to fuck something.
I'm into that though.
Yeah.
If you can take me to Brookstone,
yeah,
like I'll use any of that. It's the sex sexed. It's like the sex shops that I walk in and I immediately like I'm turned into my mother and I'm just a wreck. But I'm down. I'm totally down. I just need somebody else to like take that. Like I have to be with somebody who's like, I got you.
Oh, take the initiative and like initiative. Let's go shopping and let's look at what
and like decide and make all the decisions. And I'll just stand there and like panic.
Well, there's a whole like group of like sex stores now that are really catered to queers and women.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Babeland or Good Vibrations, of course. And, you know, there's a lot of e-tailers, too, that are sort of.
You might have to just take me. We might have to
Yeah, we can just go.
I'll just sweat bullets the whole time.
I do love any kind of butt plug.
Like using it on someone or using it on you?
Both.
Both.
I like anything.
Anything
in,
but. Yeah,
in
I'm into the butt. Yeah.
I do love an anal orgasm. This is my thing for 2020.
Yeah.
Lots of anal orgasms. Yeah. I think that's really.
Yeah. I couldn't be in more agreement with you.
Yeah.
It's a really nice place.
It's my other pussy.
And there's so many chambers. Like, don't you feel like once you're in there?
Yeah.
It's real tight getting in. And then once you're in, you're like,
right.
What? I had no idea that there was so much going on
in
here.
So many things.
So many rooms.
It's like an escape room.
It's a panic room.
You get in there.
You can't get out.
You can't get out. Jodie Foster's in there. I mean,
wait, who's the little girl? Isn't that Stewart? Kristen Stewart?
Yes.
Yeah, she's so cute. She's definitely in there.
She's super cute.
She's so cute. I knew she was gay in that movie
for sure.
She's
so hot. Yeah.
She's so gay.
She's so hot. And I love, I love her. I think like, the sort of like the toys, I think, I always think about like toys being emblematic of lesbian sexuality, but there's a whole like class of lesbians who just are not into toys.
That's me. I literally do nothing.
Don't need it.
I'm so boring.
No, it's not boring.
But I also like kind of feel weirdly proud of that. Like, if I'm satisfied, but it's 2020. I'm time to move on. Like I've been seeing somebody who's like wants to get into toys. I'm like, okay, I got to figure this out.
Yeah. Because
you know what I mean? I got to take my sports bra off and like,
actually
become an adult, a lesbian adult.
You have all this like technology at your disposal to kind of like do things and learn about whatever. The vibrator thing has really changed my sexuality over time, so I feel like everybody should get in on it.
I just feel like I'm gonna come so fast.
Well,
you know,
that's true.
Like, just boop, done, because I already do.
Okay.
You know?
See, that's good. That's good because then it's like you're really in touch with your body.
Yeah.
You know, for me, like, I'm so far. Like, I have to.
It takes you a long time?
It takes me forever.
Really?
And then it's like, that's why I'm sort of like, I kind of hover around it. Like, I try to, like, get there, like, and hover around it, get close.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're, like, at the airport there, I'm, like, in the cell phone parking lot.
Yep.
Like, because I just.
Go there.
It takes so long. It's like going to the airport.
No, I'm right there.
Yeah.
I'm a hot spot.
It's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I think, but that's probably why I've not really gotten into toys and stuff, because I'm like, let
you
me just do
to.
This. Like,
you
I'm
don't need
to. Done, you know?
Because you're young and you don't have to. Do you ever talk about that as a comic?
No, but I should, huh? Maybe.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I think that so many women are not orgasmic.
Yeah. They're not. I mean, they're really not. They need to. You have to, like, I'll be down there forever.
Right.
Like, to the point where, you're. Tongue hurts the next day.
Yeah,
like
of course.
Just need a brace for my tongue.
I know.
It's
because
bad.
It's like a very, I think because we're so conditioned to not be sexual in subtle ways as children to grow up
absolutely.
And be out of touch with it.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
I don't know. I somehow slipped through that.
That's good.
And I don't know how. But most women I've been with they take forever. And or they're like shocked if they orgasm. They're like, minds are blown. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why don't you know it's sad? Because I'm like, what? That means you have not explored your body either.
Right, right.
You know?
It's very, it's frustrating, but it's great that you're helping.
It's
you're like a docent.
It really is my cause.
You know? You're like a guy.
Yeah.
That's
that
good,
is my point of being here.
That's a good thing.
On this earth.
Now, when you do comedy, what do you talk about? Like, it's not like, so if it's not about this kind of stuff, this is my main, like, if I'm covering sex and comedy, it's all about sex toys.
Yeah. I don't talk about toys because I don't use them, but I'm I should probably talk about the fact that I don't use them.
Right, because that's
it's kind of funny. I look like I probably would be all into, people expect me to be more like liberal and progressive and in all those ways that I'm just not. I'm more, a lot more boring than I think I look. But no, I do. I mean, I talk about my sexuality a lot. I talk about my gender a lot. I try to talk about, I like to cater to like straight guys and stuff. Like I just like, I like being a comrade with straight guys. Being like, you know, just like, Like just,
that's cute.
Yeah. It's really like,
I like that.
Yeah. It's fun. I mean, it, I, you know, I feel like a lot of times people have called me like, I've heard when people back in the day were like, you're a gay comic. Or you know what I mean? Like when you're queer, people try to put you in that box of like, you're just a queer comic. You're just a gay comic. So I really do try to not focus on that all the time.
That's
Does that make sense?
No, that's positive because then you can
also
be anything.
But I also want to talk about my experiences. Like it's a hard, I find that to be a really hard balance in this industry.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like whatever you feel like is funny is important to just talk about. That's the, that's the main point.
Right.
I mean, why did you want to be a comedian? Like what inspired you to, when did you start?
I started 4 years ago. So when I was 32, I honestly, the initial reason why I started doing stand-up was because I felt like I wasn't making any headway in any other way. Like I was like trying to write and I couldn't really get in front of anybody. I didn't know anybody. And I just felt like maybe if I put a face to my voice, then that would be helpful in just getting people to see me and know me. And then I did an open mic and was like, oh, this is everything in the entire world.
Yeah,
and
then
I
you
can't
figured
stop.
It out. Then you're like, oh, I'm good.
It just clicked.
Yeah,
and nothing else had. I'd done music. I'd done writing. I'd worked in nonprofit. Like I just, you know, I just did one of those, like I was a roustabout. I just did jack of all trades, tried everything. And then did stand up and realized, oh, well, that's, you know, that's what I should be doing.
That's
love
a
that.
Great, that's a great realization because, you know, it is the weirdest job in entertainment because not everybody can do it, but the people that do it have to.
You have to.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what I did before. You know, I mean, I know I've always been like the comedian in the group.
Right.
And I've always done, been funny. But I, like, what the fuck did I do every night before stand-up?
Yeah, it's like your life opens up. And you're just like, oh, oh. And then you're like, the thing is that about being comic, it is kind of like clerical. Like, it's like you're like, you're the clergy.
Yeah.
You're called to do it. You do it. And then that's all you can do. And then you're missing out on most of your friends' birthday parties for the rest of their lives.
Everything. Love.
Anything love.
Your dog
related.
Is screwed unless they're three pounds like yours
she can
and
go
can
everywhere.
Come everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically are in a relationship like a nun with God, but it's not God. It's comedy.
It's comedy.
And laughter. And jokes.
And God hates you.
Yeah.
and God wants to make things really hard.
Well, no, I think God likes to laugh. And, you know,
you're right.
There's like some sort of divine intervention that sort of guides you to it.
Yes, there is.
You know.
It's funny. On my drive out, it's really wonderful that I'm doing this with you this week because on my drive out to LA, I moved to LA 14 years ago with my best friend, and on the drive out, we listened to you the whole way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had you on CD, and it's so funny. And we would like, you know, take roads where there wasn't radio, and we just put you in every single time.
Aww.
And she passed away a year ago this week.
Oh no.
Yeah. So it's which is, you know, very sad, but also really amazing that it's come full circle and getting to do this with you now. And it's things like that, moments like that I look back on. I'm like, I clearly was in always teetering or flirting with that, or like it was in there somewhere. There was a part of me that felt called to it in some regard. Maybe I didn't trust myself because the way I grew up, or I don't know if a lot of women feel that way, or queer people, or just people in general. But stand-up's fucking scary, and until you try it. It's this weird entity that doesn't seem approachable, or it doesn't seem like it's yours.
Right.
You have to try it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is mine. I have to do this.
And it's really amazing to realize that. I mean, it's really lucky that you got to realize it young.
Yeah.
And then you got to go for it.
I wish I'd realized it much younger, though.
Well, it's like it takes what it takes, you know, and it's like you come to it when you're supposed to.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think it is the best life. It's the best.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anything different. Like, I mean, I do at one point every single day, I'm like, should I go back to law school or like be a doctor? Like, what should I, should I like pick something more, you know, secure? I mean, no, of course not. But
well, the thing about it is that we do have job security as comedians because you, everybody that I know that has to do it is successful.
Yeah.
They get there.
Yeah.
You know, it's the people that are like, well, not really sure. I don't really like it. I'm like, no, I'm just doing this now. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to get acting work.
Yeah.
Those people fall out.
Yeah.
But the people who are like, I do this because I know I'm supposed to do this and I'm just doing it and I don't care, they always become successful. It may take a little bit of time. Yeah. And sometimes it surprises you because it takes a long time sometimes. But they get there. Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't take any time at all. It's just a very strange thing, but we all get there.
Yeah, that's really beautiful and encouraging. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have days where you're like, what am I doing? Like, am I crazy?
No.
You know?
No.
Yeah. It's no, like, I mean, I couldn't... I would die. I went home for 2 weeks to Virginia recently, mm-hmm. and I did like a couple of small shows, and it mm-hmm. didn't. I was losing my mind.
Yeah.
Not doing it.
It's hard.
It's hard. Yeah.
It's really hard, and it's hard to come back to it after you haven't done it for a long time, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
So it's like if you keep it close and you do it as much as you can, and it's always in the front of your mind, it's going to work out fine. Yeah. You know.
When did you feel like you knew? How old were you when you started?
I started when I was 14.
Wow. And God, that's amazing.
I just didn't want to be a kid anymore.
Yeah.
Like, so I just did it and then I didn't care. Like, I was like, it doesn't matter because I'm just going to do like open mics for the rest of my life. Like, I didn't care what it turned into.
Yeah.
It didn't matter because I just knew, oh, I'm doing this. And then, you know, it's like things happen, but it was always just the satisfaction of like writing a good joke and it working that kept me going.
Yeah.
And that's still the most satisfying thing.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. Otherwise, it's not authentic and everyone sees through it, right? It's and you're just full of shit.
Yeah. And then, but there's like always, there's some people that come around that I'm like, oh, they really changed the game for me. One of them is Brent Weinbach.
Oh, he's amazing.
He's amazing.
Every time I see him, mm-hmm. There's no one like him right now.
No.
Nobody.
It is so funny. Are there other people that you like that?
Yeah. Hannah Einbinder is a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. and she's really unique. She's young. She's like 25, and she just is so sure of herself and who she is, and I'm always thrown, like, especially because of her age. I'm like, you seem like you've been doing this for 30 years, mm-hmm. and you're so comfortable and timeless, which is really phenomenal. But Brent is, when I met him, I lost my mind.
Yeah.
Like, really lost my mind over him. There's I wish I could remember his name, but you had Daniel Webb. He's phenomenal.
He's amazing. I love him.
He's so likable.
He's so, and he looks like Kaia Gerber.
He does, yeah.
Like, he's like, he's got this like supermodel DNA that I'm like, what is going on?
If he was like, I'm transitioning, I'd be like, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, you're just perfect.
Just don't have to do a thing.
He's like, really, like, my joke with him is that he's like an off-duty model.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not wearing makeup right now. I just can't.
That's 100% what he is.
He's like an off-duty model. Yeah. Like, it's so, he's really funny.
He's very funny.
He's really engaging and mm-hmm. like, just the audience like feels comfortable and safe.
Yeah.
But he's so fun.
He's so fun. And there's a lot of good queer comedians right now that are like him, that are just mm-hmm. kind of busting in. And mm-hmm. we need so much more of that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We need so much. Robbie Hoffman's really amazing.
She's
queer. And mm-hmm. she's just had this phenomenal upbringing and lived in Canada. And she's queer. She's just like, she's just really interesting. And she's kind of like a Larry David and like a little queer woman. Like, but she's great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's just a ton of good queer comics coming up that are like blowing the lid off of this whole thing, I feel.
I do think that queers have a special place in comedy because it is like an outsider art form. And queer comedy has always existed. Like, there's like always been a need for that. And it's the one industry, too, where lesbians make the most money.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're right.
It's an aspirational lesbian profession.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
From Ellen on, you know,
Wanda,
all of them, you know, all of them. Rosie.
Oh, God, Rosie. I love Rosie. What a maniac. I love her.
She's so great. She's so fun. And
are you actual pals with her?
Yeah, she's really cool. She is like the most hilarious. And, you know, we've toured together a bunch. She helped me out. Like, she got me stand-up spotlight in like 1992
because
she was hosting that show on VH1 then.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
She helped me a lot like in the beginning, and I've always had just a lot of respect and love for everything she is, all that she's about.
She's amazing.
She's super cool. And she is like somebody that, but yeah, talk about like aspirational lesbian.
Oh my God, I know.
Yeah, you know,
like, and just says it like it is, and yeah, has been all of it. She's been like the likable, like cushy little, like she's been all of it. She's been like League of Their Own lesbian. She's
yeah,
been, you know, she was in Sleepless in Seattle. Like she's just run the gamut.
Great. She's great.
Yeah, she's
I
great.
Like her in Exit to Eden. Do oh my God. That?
Oh my God. Yes, I loved Exit to Eden.
I love that movie. But it's
I'm
going
to watch that tonight.
It's very good. Sure. But it's like, yeah, just like. It is like the one place I think because lesbians do well in comedy because we don't care about what men think.
No, Paula Poundstone.
Oh my God, I want to be her
all time.
I want. She's my all time favorite.
Is she? She's my all time favorite. And people are always like, "Like,
no, she's a genius."
Isn't that horrible? Like people like younger. I feel like now
oh my God.
She's a fucking genius.
She's a genius.
I stood in line to get her autograph recently.
Oh my God,
I like lost my mind.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She. Most people know her from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but. Her comedy is like, it is so next level. It has always been.
Always. Yes, she'll do crowd work for an hour.
Yeah, forever.
And kill you.
She did this one show where everybody that went to the bathroom, she would go to their chair and put on their jacket
no.
and go through their pockets.
No.
And it was so funny.
God, that's genius.
It's so genius, but so easy, like easy to listen yeah. to and weird.
Yeah.
And she's kind of a weird person.
She's very odd, but in the most approachable, like
beautiful.
You just, she's like your weird
way.
Aunt that you just yeah. want to be around all
I
the
want,
time.
I wore like neckties and like blazers with shoulder pads because I want to be her.
That's really cute.
When I was younger.
She doesn't have any specials on anything. Like
no.
you have to YouTube it and they're all grainy.
It's so she is really
She's
the best.
Very special. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. I've seen her. A bunch
definitely
like Humphreys in San Diego
oh
like,
wow
like just
that's great
yeah it's great it's like all these like rich San Diego people
yeah
who like love her
yeah
you know
she is amazing well you are amazing
thank
where
you.
Can people find out to see your shows where can they go
you
what
can,
is the best
would be Instagram mm-hmm. At Mav Viola MAVVIOLA or my website which is mavviola.com
mm-hmm. yeah. and you can see us together in the movie Play It As It Lies.
Yes, you can.
Eliza Schlesinger's movie. Our relationship is in the movie. You'll have to
we're
see
gonna
it.
Have a spinoff. For
we're
sure.
gonna have a spinoff. You have to see the movie to see what happens. But thank you so much
yeah,
for being here.
I thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful.
Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The Margaret Show is an Erio's production, with editing by Kat Hong and original music by Garrison Starr. Erio's.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.